The best in Bitcoin made audible. You're listening to Bitcoin Audible with Guy Swan. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. Happy July 4th, almost. It's not quite the 4th today, but many of you will be listening to this on the 4th, and we will be reading A Celebration of Our Independence today by Jimmy Song. Everybody knows good old Song, and he's got a great article published on Medium today, and it is titled Bitcoin, A Declaration of Monetary Independence. This is not to be confused with the Declaration of Monetary Independence written by Brady Swenson, which is in very different fashion, but this is a great summary of our current monetary, the ludicrous monetary system that we are currently part of, and the declaration of our independence that comes in the form of buying Bitcoin. And that's what I'm doing for July 4th. I don't really have any fireworks to celebrate, so I will celebrate by stacking sats. And that's outside of the what I have with Swan Bitcoin. So I'll stack my normal stack on, Monday night when that comes back around. SwanBitcoin.com/guy will get you 10 free dollars. If you haven't set that up, you're failing. You need to auto stack your sats. But I'm going to stack for July 4th a little bit extra just to feel that much better about my future. But let's go ahead and get into the article. Again, this is by Jimmy Song. Everybody knows Jimmy. I'll have links in the show notes so that you can check out. Drop some applause on this article because you'll want to. You'll be clapping by the time we get to the end of this thing. But you can check out the link to the Medium page and, of course, follow Jimmy on Twitter if you are not. But without further ado, let's get into the article. Bitcoin, a declaration of monetary independence. The system is rigged. We can all see it in the opulent residences of the rich in San Francisco, which lie blocks away from the squalid tents of the homeless. We can feel it in the way that certain people and businesses do little to better civilization, yet make ludicrous amounts of money. We can hear it in the frivolity with which certain people spend money and the morbid gravity of those whose souls are crushed by debt. That the system favors certain people and screws over others is obvious even to a five-year-old. Why the system is so unfair is not at all obvious and is the source of much political confusion. People on the left think the rich get there through exploiting the poor. People on the right think the poor get there because they're lazy. What's the truth? What's going on and why is the system rigged? Fiat money is unfair. At the root of the unfairness of the current system is money. This is not the first place people look, but it is where every sound analysis leads. The system is unfair because the money itself is unfair. To see how this is the case, let's start with what we've been observing the past 4 months. Governments all around the world have spent with complete abandon. But where does that money come from? Who's paying for all the stimuli and bailouts and grants? The amounts in these emergency measures to revive the economy in the past few months are absolutely staggering. They are well in excess of revenue these governments collect in taxes. There are two possible answers. The money is coming from no one in particular and not paid for by anyone, something for nothing. Or the cost is hidden and paid by people, just not obviously, something for something. How fiat money works. Is it really so simple? Can we help everyone who needs help just by printing more money without bad effects? Can we get something for nothing? If it really is that simple, this leaves us with the obvious question. If the government can just print money to pay for everything, why are we paying taxes at all? If the Fed or U.S. government can spend $6 trillion to revive the economy and it doesn't have any other effect, why not spend $60 trillion or $300 trillion, enough to make every person in the U.S. a millionaire? The fact that this hasn't been done, and just common sense, is evidence that we can't get something for nothing. This is a convenient lie to give the people the illusion of getting government services without cost. Despite what we may want to believe, we can't get something for nothing. Such claims that legislators promote are the economic equivalent of perpetual motion machines. That is, impossible. The spending is paid for via less purchasing power, or what we call inflation. So why haven't we seen that much inflation? Hasn't the Consumer Price Index, CPI, been 2-3% for a long time now? For U.S. dollars, at least, there's something called the exorbitant privilege, which is the result of a particular historical event, namely, the result of World War II. The dollar hegemony. The dollar privilege, or dollar hegemony, is propped up through its position in international trade. Oil, in particular, has to be bought with dollars, so every company and every country has to keep some reserve in dollars, or get loans in dollars, if it wants to buy oil. Because of the dollar's usefulness in buying oil, international trade tends to be settled in the dollar as well. As a result, the dollar has far more liquidity than any other currency. So in a liquidity crisis like we have now, capital flows toward the dollar, meaning that there's higher demand for USD. The demand for the dollar offsets the dollar inflation or expansion. To be more precise, it's actually the other way around. The Fed is expanding the supply of US dollars to offset the crazy dollar demand around the world. This in turn means that other currencies depreciate relative to the dollar. In other words, US dollar inflation gets exported. Though the U.S. does produce many goods that get exported around the world, the exorbitant privilege is in being able to export the dollar. The trade deficit is essentially goods that enter the U.S. for newly printed money. Monetary expansion, aka quantitative easing, credit facilities, loan programs, money printing, is an obscured tax. We cannot get something from nothing, and $6 trillion in monetary expansion will have the effect of taking stored value from all owners of the money, which is an implicit tax. What's more, since a lot of the dollar holders are not in the U.S., this effectively taxes people around the world who have no say at all in U.S. government, let alone the Fed's monetary policy. All these people, companies, and countries that hold the dollar are getting taxed without representation. The morality of monetary expansion is explained by a 14th century bishop, Nicole Oresma. Quote, "For every change of money involves forgery and deceit and cannot be the right of the prince, as has previously been shown. Therefore, from the moment when the prince unjustly usurps this essentially unjust privilege, it is impossible that he can justly take profit from it. Besides, the amount of the prince's profit is necessarily that of the community's loss. But whatever loss the prince inflicts on the community is injustice and the act of a tyrant and not of a king, as Aristotle says. And if he should tell the tyrant's usual lie, that he applies that profit to the public advantage, he must not be believed, because he might as well take my coat and say he needed it for the public service." End quote. The euphemisms for fiat money printing are legion. Loans, debt, bond issue, or some other financial instrument that implies being paid back. This is to give the illusion that the value is being taken not from the holders of the dollar, but from some specific entity that lent it the money, and that the debt will be paid back in some way later. This is the ethical equivalent of seizing my coat and saying that it will be given back later because the government has need of it. At the very least, I should be compensated for the fact that my coat is being used by the government. And indeed, there is compensation being paid by the government, but it doesn't go to you or me. It goes to the central bank, or more precisely, the private and undisclosed shareholders of the member banks of the Federal Reserve, in the form of interest. So, in a way, someone else gets compensated to borrow your goods. Imagine if the government seized your car for 6 months and compensated some banker you've never met that doesn't have anything to do with your car. That's what's happening when the Fed expands the money supply. As Aresma says above, monetary expansion is an unjust seizure of wealth. The open and honest way for any government to pay for its services would be to explicitly tax the citizens. People generally don't like taxes, so will not consent without a really good reason. This is how governments were held accountable in hard money societies, as government couldn't tax too much without a revolt. Yet the government can and does tax its citizens, just not explicitly or openly. Instead, it does so covertly and implicitly through inflation. By this mechanism, it satisfies the right by having low explicit taxes, and the left by providing lots of government services. Deficit spending and monetary expansion is a loophole that every government has exploited to tax its citizens for the last 50 to 100 years. How Bitcoin is different. Bitcoin has two unique qualities which make it especially fair. First, it is near impossible to counterfeit. Anyone running a full node can check quite easily whether the Bitcoins they received are genuine. Spoiler, BCH is not Bitcoin, nor is BSV. That is, Bitcoin is easily recognizable and cannot be faked. Second, it is impossible to inflate Bitcoin beyond the supply schedule created at its inception. The entire community of full node operators and Bitcoin holders would have to agree to make that happen. Spoiler, it won't. That is, it's a hard money with a hard cap. These are specifically the two properties that make implicit and covert taxation so difficult and incentivizes an open and honest government. No longer can the sovereign just print more money to fund its latest program. It would either have to save revenue from prior years, cut some other program, or tax the populace to pay for it. The loophole of deficit spending, which is really just printing more money and imposing an implicit tax on all dollar holders, is closed, and spending has to be aligned with revenue. Aresma's insight that money belongs to everyone that owns it reveals a fundamental truth. Monetary expansion violates the property rights of everyone who holds the money. Bitcoin is the first money to enforce the ideal that the money belongs to everyone who holds it, and not some authority that claims it with threats of violence. Bitcoin is the first money that makes the monetary abuse by authorities impossible. Bitcoin is impossible to inflate without consent from everyone. On a Bitcoin standard, the path that governments have to take in order to raise revenue is to get explicit consent for taxes instead of implicit theft through inflation. Conclusion. The monetary system that we are under is a tyranny. The Fed is an independent organization and is not accountable to voters. Furthermore, the dollar standard means that inflation gets exported to people outside the U.S. who have even less say. The dollar hegemony is an unjust system where the wealth of the world is controlled by an organization that's able to tax without anyone's consent. The rallying cry of 1776 was no taxation without representation. The entire world is being taxed by an organization in which only the very powerful and rich have representation. It's time to end the Fed. This isn't a new sentiment. Ron Paul wrote a book about it over a decade ago. But now we can do something about it outside of our broken political system. We can buy Bitcoin and declare monetary independence. Real justice means economic justice. Fairness means a system that isn't rigged. Bitcoin propels meritocracies. Bitcoin expunges systemic unfairness. The system is rigged. Bitcoin fixes this. Thanks to Robert Breedlove. All right, and that concludes Jimmy Song's Bitcoin, a Declaration of Monetary Independence. Before I dig into this one, let's go ahead and hit our sponsor, and we will jump in for Guy's take on this awesome piece on our 4th of July weekend. You know, something funny, when I was first getting into this article, I was already just kind of brainstorming on some analogies I wanted to give to try to re-explain or reiterate his points. And he actually, Song actually uses in this article an explicit analogy that I had been thinking about as I was getting to that point in the article, and that was the government being able to loan out your car and then the bank getting paid interest for you, not for the borrowing of the car, who had nothing to do with it. And it is because they are allowed to print the certificates, the notes, for the value of your car without ever having to produce or have the value to begin with. Like, it is literally a massive fraud. Our monetary system is at its base a system that allows those close to the banking system, those in the banking system, the government, and essentially this political class, this deeply connected banking and political class, to take value from everyone else without them knowing. It is an implicit tax, but you can't call it a tax because even yes, taxation is theft. But at least a tax is, you're aware of the tax. The tax is at least something explicitly being taken from you. But to tax without even telling you you're being taxed, that's like a special kind of, yeah, I just straight stole it from you. And it's not even taxation without representation. It is literally theft from a fraudulent banking system. It is a way to fudge the numbers in an accounting system so that all of the actual value and real resources flows toward the banking system, even though they produce absolutely nothing. And the money itself only obscures what's going on. That's what makes it so difficult, because it's so unbelievably complicated in trying to wrap your head around what this actually looks like. How is it that fiat money is so explicit, so deeply unfair? And I've always felt like the best analogies or the best explanations go back to the actual underlying things, like the actual stuff that's being made in the economy. And because money is just a proxy, money is of no value in and of itself. It is literally, it is points. Like, it's numbers printed on a piece of paper. You can't do anything with that. I can print big, giant numbers on pieces of paper all day. I can write one with six zeros behind it, or I could just write a one on a piece of paper, and it is fundamentally no different. I can't do anything with one more than I can do with the other. The value of the money itself is in how well it is an accounting system for real value in the economy. And what we have is a money that allows a certain group of people to completely exploit and drain the value from a different class of people that can't do anything, that are completely susceptible to this. They must use it by law, or they're breaking the law, while the other directly benefits from its control and printing. And like Jimmy details in this article, this is done as debt. Like, a debt that doesn't get paid back, a deficit, is the same thing. It is essentially the exact same thing as printing money, except it's paying interest, like you're renting a car from somebody, to the Federal Reserve, to a bank that never had any value to begin with. They just, I mean, think about this. You're completely broke. Just imagine you're in the Federal Reserve's position of authority and we're starting from scratch, okay? Like, so, yes, the Federal Reserve right now supposedly has all of these assets and they've got gold in their vaults, and all of this tends to obscure what is actually occurring. So let's just start from scratch. We have absolutely nothing, but we are the Federal Reserve and we have their privilege of issuing new loans and printing debt. And the fact that it is debt itself is actually even more pernicious than simply printing money. To be able to print money and then have someone owe it back to you with interest is even more ridiculous. It's more insane than simply stealing it through counterfeiting. Because, again, let's go back to we're completely broke, but we happen to have the position of the Federal Reserve. And I've got no money, I've got no house, I'm nothing, we're completely destitute, but I've got a quote-unquote account in which I can loan money to banks, and they need some reserves, so we loan out. We set the interest rate completely. We just dictate whatever it is, and we are the lenders of last resort for the U.S. currency. I can create $1 trillion out of thin air and require that they pay me 1% interest. Again, I'm broke, completely destitute, I have no value whatsoever, and I am loaning out, I now get paid 1%. I get paid $1 billion a year in value that I can use to be one of the wealthiest people in the world for absolutely nothing. Nothing more than the fact that I have the sole explicit privilege of printing the money into existence. So money itself is just a proxy. Again, it's just numbers. If it's sound money, it's a good accounting system. If it's unsound money, with political privilege, with money printing and inflation, then that only means that it obscures, it just sucks at accounting for value in the economy. And in doing so, those who actually get close to or get to benefit from the fraudulent accounting first get to suck the real wealth from the people who are actually producing it. So let's go back to another basic analogy. Since money is just a certificate for other things, that's what it is. It's something that I can trade to get other things in the economy, real value for the economy. Let's start with as basic economy as possible. We've got four people. One of them has done absolutely nothing. He sat on his butt and been completely lazy and sat in the sun and is relatively destitute because of it. Just getting by with as little possible work as they can for 3 years. And then we have three other people. So four people in total in this economy. And those three other people have worked their literal butts off. They have toiled morning, noon, and night and weekend, everything, supporting themselves and building themselves houses, going out and cutting down trees, carving out logs, and putting these houses together. And it took them 3 years to build these houses. Now, in order to facilitate trade, they create a certificate that is in exchange for their house. So, and that's the money. The money is just a certificate for some other good in the economy. So the three people who have houses each have one certificate for a house. And that means trade is even. The fourth guy can't buy anything because he didn't do anything, while the other three could trade their certificate for a house to someone else for a house. And, you know, one person could buy the house and they'd have two, but in doing so, the other person would have gotten a certificate and then they could buy a house. So they could trade their houses back and forth using the certificates, and everybody would still be net zero at the end. Everybody earned a house, therefore everyone can purchase a house. Now imagine that in this scenario, the fourth person prints three housing certificates, just counterfeits them. He goes out and buys all three of the houses from the other person, from the other people. Now each of them has two housing certificates, but there's still only three houses. The fourth person, who has done absolutely nothing, now owns all three of the houses, and we have six certificates chasing three houses. We've changed absolutely nothing. Nobody has produced anything more. The only thing that has happened is that the fourth person has stolen everything that the other three people did. That is literally how our banking system works in an oversimplified generalization. Like, it does that through 1,000 obscured and confusing terminology and mechanisms and says, oh, we'll pay it back in these ridiculous, like, it's just scheme on top of scheme to obscure the fact that that is the reality, is that the banking system is sucking up all of the value of the people who work their butts off. Why do you think it is that it feels like everybody's running on a treadmill, that nobody's actually going anywhere, despite the fact that we're producing our asses off? We've never been more productive in the history of the world. Why aren't we getting that value back? Why are we having to work longer days and feel like we're getting paid less? And if we don't get a 10% raise at the end of the year, it feels like we're moving backwards. Because our entire monetary system supports the corporate banking and political elite. They get the money first. They get the certificates before they ever have to do the work, and then they buy it from us, and suddenly the price of a house is 2 certificates, and we don't know how we lost half the value, how suddenly, after working our asses off for 3 years building a house, we can now only afford half of one, and we don't have our house anymore. This is happening across the globe. It's the greatest heist in the history of the world. It is absolute fraudulent. There is no sound economy, and there is no honest economic valuation without sound money. And if we don't separate money from the political class, if we cannot secure a money from the counterfeiting and from the authority of the political class to simply print themselves whatever they want, there is no way to actually get it back. There's no way to solve this problem without removing money from the state and banking apparatus. That is why Bitcoin is one of the most profound inventions in the history of the world. Every single person who runs the client on their computer is a referee that absolutely 100% proves down to the 100 millionth of a Bitcoin that there is not a single cheater in the entire system, and no bank, no president, no political class, no corporation anywhere can modify or lie in that system. That is an unbelievable breakthrough, and alone, it's worth trillions and trillions of dollars. It's at least, in the last couple of months, worth $6 trillion. At least $6 trillion, because that's how much we just got defrauded. It is a declaration of monetary independence, and it is, in my opinion, the only realistic potential to, it's the only hope of actually getting past this incredible injustice that we have let ourselves be bled dry with for 70 some odd years now, far more potently and to an insanely greater degree in the last 20 to 30. What it produces is an abuse of the price system. It makes it so that our measurements are not equal. Is that the value of a dollar that comes from a corporate loan from the government and from the banking institution at an incredibly low interest rate is far more valuable to that corporation than the same dollar as soon as it gets to the middle class or the lower class and gets it at 20% interest for a loan and buys not nearly as much, buys assets at far higher prices. And in doing so, we actually have corporations. We actually have giant, multi-billion-dollar institutions. It's like an accounting system where after you make a couple of different moves, the budget doesn't actually balance anymore. The points that you started with aren't the same as the points that you end with. So if you try to budget for the month, you have no idea whether you turned a profit or whether you destroyed resources and came out with a loss at the end of the month. I mean, imagine if our measuring, like measuring distances or links or anything else wasn't accurate after a couple of subsequent measurements. Like, imagine if you had, like, think about this in the terms of like economic, like a tier of economic processes, like down the economic ladder, is you have someone measures, you know, some runway. and they let's do a plane. They got a runway, and somebody is measuring the runway, and that's the foundation with which we're going to design everything else around how we're going to use this runway. And so that measurement goes to, it's a mile long, and so we need a mile of runway in order to work with. And then they send that to the engineers, and the engineers design wings on a plane that will lift with a certain amount of speed. And then they send, based on, how much runway they have, how much speed they can actually get. And then they send it to the next engineers who design an engine that can get them a certain amount of speed in a certain amount of time over distance. And then they send that to the people who are actually building the planes. And then they transfer it over to the number of people who can actually be put on the plane, et cetera, et cetera. And this keeps going down the line. But every single step of the way, the actual length of the measure, the actual measurement is changing. It's getting shorter and shorter and shorter until at the end of the line, when they finally built the plane and they've put all the people on it, all of their calculations are now actually done for a runway that is 50% longer than they actually have. It's as if the runway got shorter and shorter because they're basing it off numbers that aren't consistent. And so they now put all these people, all these normal people who aren't even part of this process, they put them all on this plane, and then the plane tries to take off, and there's not enough runway. There's half the runway there's supposed to be, and all of those people crash while everyone still got paid all the way up the ladder. The people at the end of the line who finally have to put it into motion and live off the real value, off the real meaning of what those measurements were, they pay the price. It's never the people at the beginning. We have that same sort of interaction, that same relationship happening between the people who get the money first and the people who get the money last. And in doing so, the people who get it first get far more value out of it at a far lower interest rate and cost, and the perception that they're more creditworthy when they're simply able to get more value out of the same dollar. And then finally, 20 transactions and tiers down the economic ladder later, it gets to the average person, and you've got high interest rates and low value out of the money. And because of this, you literally have massive corporations that at the end of the year appear to make a profit, appear to get more valuable, but are actually destroying resources. They're actually not producing a net good for the economy. Not to mention the whole of the banking system, that all of these corporations and these political elites that are getting this connection all owe it back to an institution that never had the money to begin with. They never had the value. Again, it's the fourth guy in the economy that's getting to print housing certificates, and the three people who built the houses are now suddenly unable to afford a house. Doesn't that kind of feel like what's happening right now? It's because of our money. There is no such thing as something for nothing. It always comes from somewhere. If you gave everybody in the world $1 million, guess what wouldn't change? The amount of stuff we have. Nobody would suddenly live in twice the house. Nobody would, there wouldn't be twice as many TVs. It would be the exact same amount. If somebody gave me $1 million right now, I wouldn't have a bigger house. I wouldn't have more screens. And if you even that out over the whole world, nothing changes. All that happens is that anybody who saved $1,000 is now completely meaningless. That value they saved is gone because now it costs $1 million to fill up your grocery cart because food is still scarce. It costs $2 million to buy a TV because there's still the same number of TVs that exist. And anybody who had worked their butts off to save hundreds of thousands of dollars, who had worked 20 years of their life slaving to put 10% away every week, all of that work is meaningless. The rug was completely pulled out from underneath them. Every choice that they made was deleted. Every value they produced was just confiscated. When some idiot economist like Paul Krugman tells you that debt is money we owe to ourselves, no, it isn't. It is money, it is value that someone who consumed real resources owes to someone who produced them. If our economy does not compensate people who make things, and instead it pays people who consume things, the economy will consume itself until there is nothing left. And the only way to solve that is to fix the money. Fix the system by which we measure and understand what value is. And Bitcoin is damn near our only chance at doing that. That's why I'm here. That's why Jimmy Song wrote this article. Great article. And another one to recommend actually is by the same title, Brady Swenson's A Declaration of Monetary Independence. Very different form, written in the wording of the actual Declaration of Independence. But it's a great one to get you riled up about this stuff, particularly after hearing the explanation of exactly how our monetary system works and how utterly insane it is. Obviously everything that I've explained is a gross oversimplification of all of the interworking pieces and gears that essentially do the same thing. Like if you start at the beginning and go straight to the end of the product of our banking system and take out debts and interest rate setting and quantitative easing and, reserve ratios and good loans versus bad loans and CDOs. You take all of that crap out and you just look from the beginning to the end. What happened? That's what I'm trying to illustrate. That's what Jimmy Song does a great job of illustrating in this article. And that is what needs to be fixed, because obscuring it doesn't change its nature. Obscuring it just makes the theft prolonged, just makes it harder for us to identify where the problems are coming from and how we are losing so much value despite enormous increases in productivity. And we won't get it back until we fix the money. And that is why we Bitcoin. So with that, if you want to start protecting yourself from this ridiculous system and invest in a future that does not have it, where it cannot be sustained, and where real value stays real value in our monetary system, buy Bitcoin. Do your auto buy with swanbitcoin.com/guy, and that'll get you your first $10 free of sound money. But good Lord, there is no greater problem in the world. Every other problem is downwind from this. Every other problem is downwind from this. Money is the basis for trade in society. There is no, the person who doesn't actually grow and make their own food can't eat if money doesn't work. So if you do anything other than, farm, you have to have money for us to actually trade and measure the value in comparison. We need that totem of independent measurement. So that's why I think it's crazy important that we do understand this stuff and we do adopt these technologies when solutions come about, because we have the potential to live during the time when this is actually fixed, when we live during the time when we can actually get our sovereignty back and we can separate money from state. And that's an unbelievable opportunity. It's terrible to see the way the system works that we're a part of, but to see it means that we actually have the hope to leave it. We actually have the potential to fix it. So hopefully you will see how important that is. And you will join us in this crazy journey and subscribe to Bitcoin Audible. Thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this article. Huge thank you to Jimmy Song for writing this. Just a great piece. Don't forget to follow Jimmy Song. That's JimmySong on Medium and Twitter. Same handle there. And with that, peace out, and I hope you guys have a wonderful Independence Day, and I hope you exercise that independence by buying your first little bit of Bitcoin if you haven't yet. I'm going to do that right now. Swan Bitcoin, unfortunately, does not yet have one-time buys. I will be very happy when that is available, but I'm going to go up on my Cash App right now. I'm going to buy $20 worth just to make myself feel good. It's a whole hell of a lot more useful to demonstrate my independence that way than, you know, spending $30 on some fireworks and blowing something up. That's just Keynesianism right there. All right, guys. I am out. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And until next time, take it easy, everybody.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.